Our friend Fred Myers is here. I've told a story about him on the air, a funny story.
All right, here we go.
Here it is.
So wait, before you even go,
yeah,
I knew I was going to be on here.
Right.
And I invited a lot of friends of mine, I even went on text messaging. And the only person I left out is my dear ex-wife because I didn't want
her to.
I love her too. And yeah. I didn't want her to hear this because I didn't know where we were going.
Let me start there. In 1987, when I came here, I was married to a young girl. We were pretending to play house, right?
I remember.
And I was accepted. The people who accepted me were Jeff Carroll, Clark Ryan, and Fred Myers. And we oftentimes...
I double-dated you once.
And then when I went through a...
It didn't end good.
I remember a few of your ex-wives.
I think I'm going to keep the wall between us because you've held your looks.
Oh, whatever.
And you don't have a belly.
Well, whatever.
But this is true. Fred and his wife and kids, who I guess are in their 40s.
Actually, they're Lauren's going to be 35. Chase is going to be 33.
God. No. Lauren is not 35.
They gave me 5 grandchildren, dude.
Lauren is not 35.
So they...
Yeah, I know, right?
The Myers family literally took me in, especially after the breakup, and were great to me. Then after that marriage, I've talked about it on the air, I just went crazy. I couldn't commit to anybody. I was more of an alcoholic than I am now. My dad's thing was conquering women, and I would meet somebody and move on. You've heard it all on the air.
Sure.
And I'm going to tell the truth, and I'm going to issue an apology. Number one, I've talked about this. At a party one night at the ZZ Top headquarters.
Yeah.
I started talking to a young lady. This is the absolute truth.
I don't even know what you're doing with your fingers there.
All right.
I've never seen Fred at a loss for words, ever.
I know.
You're the promotion man.
And everyone said, are you nervous to go on? I go, not really, except where's he going to go?
So you were a record guy, and you had some great stories back in the day.
Yeah. Yes.
And by record guy, these are the guys who would go around and to the people like L.A. Lloyd, he's co-hosting with you.
Yes, L.A. Lloyd is my partner.
I got into radio late. 79 was really late, but there were free trips. There were
a lot of strip
gifts.
Club stakes.
I'm not saying you did this, but I'm not saying you did this, but I know a program director I used to work for got a lot of cocaine to play some records, and that was in a small market.
Stuff would just fall out of the sleeve.
That can't be true. Yeah.
Hookers and blow.
Who? That can't be true.
Those are the independent guys, not the label.
So here's the skinny. I had got hired by Warner Brother Records when I was 22 years old in 1978.
How does that happen? How does a 22-year-old get hired by Warner Brothers Records?
Well, the bottom line is when you find what you want to do, they call it, like, if you want to be a cook, you got to get in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. So when I knew that I wanted to get to be a record label dude, I had to get into the record business, which was the low-level warehouse stuff.
But did you have a guitar and try to, you like everybody, we all wanted to be rock stars?
Well, so here's the thing. The reason why I wanted you guys to play this Alice Cooper, Be My Lover, is because it was a lot like my theme song. It was, he's from Detroit, I'm from Detroit, we were in a rock and roll band, I was a drummer. I played this song, I played Black Sabbath, I played all these, you know, we were a garage band.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, I find myself working with the very same bands that I played drums to with my boys in our basement.
Did you start in the warehouse and then just work my way up by handshaking and hustling?
And here's the crazy.
Is that called a rack jobber?
Is that
what it is?
Well, there is a rack jobber, and there's a straight up warehouse where they just ship them. But a rack jobber is a definition of somebody who's filling the racks with records.
Right.
That's where the rack jobber. So the bottom line is, you ask how hard was it to get that job?
Yeah.
I interviewed 5 times.
Did you?
5. Who does that? Who interviews for a job twice without getting the message that you've been rejected?
Dale.
You should probably give it up. So anyway, we fast forward, and Warner Brothers transfers me from Detroit to Houston, and Austin is my market. And so I can launch right now into one of my first rock and roll stories for you guys, because I've been saving this one for you guys.
Yeah.
Okay. So we had signed this band called U2 on Island Records.
Never heard of them.
And it was 1980, so I'm brand new into the Texas marketplace. And Austin at the time was maybe 450,000 people, maybe. And there was a club on It's where the Brazos Hall is right now. It was called Clubfoot.
Oh, I saw Mitch Ryder and Detroit Wheels there one time.
Wait, I tell you about
other
story.
Shows.
All right, so here's the skinny. As we put them, first of all, they come into town. I get Edge and Bono in my car, and we drive to the KLBJ studios on Brazos. And the late, great Tom Quarles was...
TQ. TQ,
as we called him, was on the air.
Hello, I'm Tom Quarles.
And the best thing about Tom is that he was the consummate expert, and he was just somebody that wanted his facts straight. And then he would ask questions that not every air personality had the thought process to do, which was phenomenal for the band because this was some of their very first radio interviews ever. They couldn't get over that they were going to a rock and roll radio station that was owned by a former president, and it's rock and roll back in 1980. How old was KLBJ in 1980?
They started in 72, right?
Yeah, 74. So eight years old, you know? Yeah.
In that format.
Then when we get to the station, Tom said to Edge, he goes, I love the way your technique, you don't play lead guitar like you're shredding. You attack it and cut in such a different way. Yeah. And all of a sudden, Bono and Edge just absolutely relaxed. They totally got engaged. And it was one of these memorable scenarios because Tom Quarles was the consummate interviewer, yeah, if you will.
I didn't know that about Tom because I got here, he's production.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He was also the first DJ in America to play the police.
Yeah. Yep. He broke the police. Yep. And now there was an interview with Sting a few years ago where he goes, I think it was WLBJ.
Yeah.
So continue.
So that night we put him in Clubfoot and it was about 100 kids and Tom played I Will Follow and then he played a couple other tracks off the album. And then that night, the band comes out, and I've never seen this before, and I've been on more rock and roll tour buses telling this story to up-and-coming rock bands, because I said I've never seen this before, I've never seen it again. But U2 comes out on the stage at Clubfoot, and they play I Will Follow, which is why the kids were there, because that was the track they had heard.
Mm, right.
Then they went into the whole set, and then the show, you know, was they take a pause, and we wait for an encore, and we're backstage. And Bono looks at everybody and goes, you guys ready? And they go, yep. And they went right back on stage, and I'm kind of off to the right. They played I Will Follow again.
I've seen the Ramones repeat their entire set.
Well.
They 30 minutes, all the songs they knew, and then they played the same song, same 30 minutes, the second time.
Yeah, well, and you know I was with the Ramones in the very beginning,
but didn't
and the
you,
Talking Heads.
After you left KLBJ, did you... I remember he was a record rep then.
Virgin. I went to Virgin Records.
I thought
Records.
You went back. No, you were, because we did that. We talked about Uncle Cracker, where you're dressed as a priest.
No. So when I made you eat the wafer, it was Lenny Kravitz, and he had a song called Heaven Help.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I go to my pastor at church, and I said, listen, I want one of those rolls of those little wafers that stick to the roof of your mouth. And he says to me, he goes,
you're consecrated.
And he goes, don't even tell me what you're doing with these.
Those are the body of Christ.
Then I went down to, what's that costume shop on Congress?
Yeah, Lucy in Disguise.
So I got a Pope outfit with the hat. And then I made my intern, who actually has a beard, dress up as a nun. And we rented an RV, and I put these hanging beads and a glopping a lava lamp on my little booth.
Oh my God.
And you had to part the beads to get inside the RV because it was Lenny Kravitz. He's like the ultimate hippie, you know, and I've got tapestries. And then we were also pre-promoting a Janet Jackson record called Janet. So I decided to take this RV and do a Texas tour, and we drove all 1,000 miles and hit 20-some stations in a week.
Wow.
And when I got Dale in the RV, we both had seriously long, curly hair and ponytails.
God, but you carried it. I looked ridiculous.
And everybody had to come into the RV and get blessed, you know, and then I would play the Heaven Help record and move on.
So you got a wafer and a line.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. Let's talk about, because you're talking after things had calmed down with drugs and stuff. But were you part of the scene before that when there was a lot of blow going around the early 80s?
Well, let me put it to you this way. On the promotion man podcast that mm-hmm. LA and I are doing.
Which is available where, by the way?
It's debuting on Monday, on the 5th.
Where?
Everywhere.
Promotionman.com. Yeah, anywhere.
On Apple, everything.
Yeah anywhere okay. You can download right. podcasts.
Worldwide release, because we even have followers all over Europe right now. They're like, it's mind-boggling. But anyway, to get back to that, L.A. Lloyd is such a great partner. So he asked me these type of questions, and we kind of go through the whole scenario because, you know, we all know that Jimi Hendrix and the Doors and all those guys were eating LSD, right? Mm-hmm. And coming, you know, playing and whatnot. So truthfully, in defense of all of this stuff, I don't think people knew what some of these things were. And society was a lot different. And we're a lot smarter today because, you know, like Mick Jagger, prime example. When I was on the road with the Rolling Stones, that guy was so intent about his diet and his regime. I mean, when we were playing stadium tours, Mick Jagger would sanction off a whole hallway in the you're in a football arenas, mm-hmm. but he'd sanction them off and he would jog up and down, you know, to warm up to hit the stage. And then when he hits the stage, it's game on. So not everybody is Keith Richards, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think everybody got smarter, and I think everybody got a pretty in tune to what you put in your body is a pretty important. How'd I do?
But who I always wondered who when a band comes to town, who is responsible for hooking up the band with? Was that part your job?
With Joe Walsh, it was Ed Mayberry and
is
I.
Is there someone farther down the line?
You know, it's funny. Joe Walsh, my good friend, one of my best friends, Bill Tom, brought him in because he owned Harmony House Records.
Yeah,
and you used to do the commercials.
A few years ago, somebody wanted me to promote him. I said, no, he threatened to sue me. I have it on tape.
Oh, he was a jerk.
He called me at home. He goes, hey, now it's Joe Walsh. Hey man,
and the drunk bass player.
He was sober, and he goes, I just want to apologize for whatever I did or said. And he goes, yeah, I don't remember it.
Yeah, the truth is, it was prevalent in a lot of in a lot of the culture. It wasn't just and roll bands.
Are you gonna you should interview people who are around it? Are you gonna bring in other record guys? Like, what you'll remember
yes.
this?
Yeah.
Kenny something. He was an independent.
Kenny Ryback.
No, this guy was an independent. It may not Kenny be Kenny. Ryback. No, this is the dude who got fired because he had enough gruff from Jimmy Buffett,
and he punched him.
And he knocked Jimmy Buffett out backstage. Clark
that wasn't Osborne.
I'll ask Clark.
That wasn't.
That was Bubba Wayne.
That was Bubba Wayne
McMahon.
Bubba Wayne actually put in his contract when he was re-signing with MCA Records that he did not have to be on tour with Jimmy Buffett ever because Jimmy came at him with a knife.
Oh, was that the story?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this whole that's why this podcast is a lot of fun because truthfully, you know, I was with Bob Marley. I was with U2. I was my very first day on the job.
Because you would travel on that tour.
Yeah, in our region.
Yeah,
because I was a local guy. I don't want to make it sound like I ran the company because I didn't. I was the bottom rug. I was the soldier getting the records played while the big bosses were at the war table planning the strategy. So I had a chance to work with Bob Marley. In fact, I shook his hand. I mean, how amazing is that?
Yeah.
And of course, Van Halen was my very first band because we had just released them in their debut album. And that was my first day on the job. So that's how L.A. Lloyd and I start the podcast, right?
Yeah, with Van Halen. And like you said, we have tons of promotion men out there and women that's got these same stories. Ray Vaughns, Bubba Wayne, you know, someone we just lost, Tasha Mack. You know, I mean, it's just still this community of people who have all these stories. And a lot of these people that are promotion men and women, you can go to all these other PDs or DJs or whatever and say, tell me your favorite Fred Meyers story. And everyone will tell you a different one. Because there's so many out there. So that's what intrigued me about being on this.
Okay, I'll tell you my favorite one in just a second. But did you ever get to do, you weren't the AR guy, but did you ever find a band and recommend it?
I actually did. Better Than Ezra was a band that I had found in Louisiana.
All right, you can leave now.
No. No, the truth is Virgin, I was at Virgin at the time, and they just passed, you know. Yeah. And so I forgot who they were.
Elektra. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you my favorite story. Are you ready?
Yeah.
And this, and I actually may get choked. I know I'm making
Does anybody say no?
To me?
Yeah.
No, not anymore.
No.
No,
don't
no,
Matt,
no, no, Matt no, does. No, this isn't embarrassing to you. This isn't embarrassing to you. And I'm going to probably get choked up again. We went to see the Rolling Stones, I think, in San Antonio.
Yeah.
And you had all the backstage passes, and you had to make a decision. I was probably mad at it, but who cares? I walked up to you and said, you walked up to me and said, listen, man, I'm really sorry. I can't get you back there. I'm out of passes. They've got a limit, whatever. He said, but I'll set you up for Dallas next week or the next week. Well, something came up, and I couldn't go to go see the Stones. So I call my brother, and he's texted on the same day of the concert. And I say, Donnie, you want to go meet the Rolling Stones? And I didn't think he'd meet them. I thought it would just be, you know, you go backstage and have, some cauliflower and some ranch. and he goes, shut up, dude. And I go, because we're always lying to each other. And I go, no, dude, if you can get to, it was Oklahoma City, I think. If you can get to Oklahoma City tonight, I have two backstage passes waiting for you. That Christmas, my brother, instead of sending out Christmas cards with the pictures, he sent a picture of him with his arms around the Rolling Stones, right?
Right.
He died. He got sick 1 year later, and he died about 18 months after that. And to this day, I still have that photograph, and it made his life. He thought it was the most amazing thing ever, and I'll never be able to thank you enough for that. I mean, it really is something, a memory I have. That is Sunnydale. That's a happy thing. It's a happy thing.
Yeah, so. And the truth is... That tour was run like a tight
Lounge,
ship.
Right?
Yeah, Voodoo, and that was run like a tight ship. In fact, what would happen is, you know, I had to tell you bad news. Like, I don't have them. Yeah. I couldn't produce them. When I was out on the road with other bands, I could produce passes if I had to. The Rolling Stones.
You would just print them at Kinko's, right?
See where I got that? So that was the case. But one of the things I could tell you about the Rolling Stones and politics of radio is I would buy tickets for the shows. And I remember I was spending $25,000 a show for tickets I could give away.
Right.
And I was giving them to all the people that needed to get them. Radio people, press, TV. And then I had to lay them on my dining room table and go, well, I can't put this music director two rows ahead of this music director. Yeah. So then I had to anguish
politics
over who is going to sit where. Listen,
can you hold on a second? I want to come back again because this is interesting. I'm glad you're here. But I got this a-hole program director who really makes us hit these.
Right. And we got to find him a chair.
And I'm now 2 minutes late on the break. So let me do this spot. We'll come right back. Fred Myers. And the name of the podcast is Promotion Man, right? Promotion Man? All right, and you can catch it on Monday. We're going to talk more here in just a second because these are great stories. All right, listen. This has been fun. It's good to see smiles.
Yeah.
On Fred.
Relieving
a bit. It's a pisser. This is Fred Myers. You heard us tell the Kinko's story before. We've told it 1,000 times.
I should get royalties.
You should.
He also owned one of the first video.
Oh, my God.
Video rental stores. And I'm talking about
video.
The Wild West.
It was the
where
Wild
you
West.
Had to have a membership to belong
exactly
to a
right.
place.
It's just video on Research Boulevard.
Fred has a new podcast with we didn't want to have him on, but L.A. hosts it, and it's our boss, so he demanded.
I made it. Made it happen.
No, I had wanted to talk to Fred about stuff. It's easier for me on the air. It's called Promotion Man. And you have this wonderful woman in the back. By the way, you got to hear us off the air. We're talking about how the Me Too movement hasn't put its toe into rock and roll yet.
Better not.
And when they, and as soon as we said that, we all started laughing.
Better
and we started reeling off 25 names. Yeah. Like, have you noticed? I'll just do this one. You notice you haven't heard anything really from Ted Nugent in about a year and a half?
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of quiet.
He's kept very quiet. Yeah. Introduce your friend here. She's going to tell us where we can get the
Teresa Miranda is our boss. Tell them where they can get the podcast.
So actually, you can follow us on Facebook at Promotion-Man, and also you can follow us on www.promotion-man.com, and also on Instagram, Promotion Man Podcast. So those are few places.
You don't have to do the www's anymore, so just tell me what it is without that. Promotion?
Promotion-man.com.
Okay, cool.
And then on Facebook, just Promotion.
You know something, Fred? I kind of feel like you've almost pulled off a Johnny Carson here because you kind of got invited back to the couch. You got to come back break.
So I think the last time I was here, I brought Cracker in, and I made you play Low, and Dale goes, we don't play music on the show.
We don't.
And here I have the band right
we
here,
don't.
Matt. And he goes, well, we don't play. And
do
I go...
Know,
you got to play the music. I'm a promotion man. You got to play the music.
You talked about Tom Quarles. I don't find I'm a very good interviewer when it comes to music and bands because, to be truthful, comedy was always our thing, and I have comics on, but yeah, I'd prefer the band to play. You don't have, we've turned down a ton of interviews.
Yeah, but we have Bob. Bob's really good at that sort of thing. That's why you have a partner. That's why I have L.A. Lloyd. You have to have partners.
All right, what band do you want to come have him play?
No, I wanted him to play the Alice Cooper,
he played a little
Be
bit
My
of
Lover,
it.
Because we go to the show the other night, and it was like going to therapy because all these things came up for me. It's like, wow, I forgot all those Alice Cooper songs that were really
amazing,
great.
Right?
Like Frankenstein. You know,
Under
about
My Wheels.
Where do you think Motley Crue and those guys really got their shtick?
Yeah.
When you really drill down on Alice.
But did you ever think, with me, did you ever think that this time would fly by this fast?
No.
Seemed like we would always be on Lake Travis.
And we'd have brown hair.
We would miss air shifts because we were stuck on the lake drunk and nobody cared. And we would always have the Rolling Papers back here in an album. And it wouldn't be a big deal to smoke pot in the back of the building or anything
Not
like that.
That I ever did anything
no,
like
nothing
that.
Like
Whoever
that.
Did that.
You know? And it's weird for me. It's tough for me sometimes.
Well, hey, we have to grow up, don't we?
But we are kind of doing these in seasons. And so we just wrapped up season one before we debuted it. But our season finale, Alice Cooper's actually going to be on the podcast.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
And it's kind of cool because I learned so much about the Detroit music scene from episodes 1 through 7 that Fred is telling me about. And then we get Alice Cooper on the show, and he literally tells the story of the past 7 episodes of everything
documented. Are you doing that like you do via ISDN now and Skype? Is that how you're able to get
any way we can get them? I mean, we got Talking Heads calling us. They want to come on next season. I mean, it's really starting to blow up. I mean, I feel like Fred's on to something here, and I'm just going to ride.
Fred has
for the
never
ride.
Been. This is a compliment. I've always considered Fred the P.T. Barnum of Austin. Yeah, I really mean that as a compliment.
I'll give him that.
He all like is
he's a showman.
Where when I get even now when I'm finally let go, I'll have a panic attack and ruminate. Fred always just goes, "What's next? What's next? What's
right.
next?" You always have. Whether it works or not.
That's why I love him because he closes on everything he starts. He
do
really
you remember
does.
The time you had the store that was used sporting goods?
Yeah. This is I owned a limousine company. I owned a limousine company because of them all the time.
What was the dumbest business move you've ever made?
Selling Austin City Living, probably.
Yeah, really.
Your real estate company.
Yeah.
But you made a good living on that.
Yeah.
Fred sold me my house back in 2003. And at the time, you just got out of the record industry into real estate. What was I, like number one or two?
You were close.
Yeah.
You were very close.
Yeah. So we've got a long history.
Why did I decide cocaine was a good idea at 41 years old?
Right.
Bob, you okay over there?
Yeah.
You got an emergency going on?
No, I'm just I'm logging into your site there.
I love the idea. As a matter of fact, I was envious. That's a great idea.
Well,
just tell rock and roll stories.
And I have to tell you, I had written a manuscript about a year and a half ago, and one thing led to another, and we're actually pitching something to like a Netflix type of deal, and then a ghostwriter is the one that helps you actually write a book.
Yeah.
And he had said to me, you know, we have to have our marketing really down. And so I found Teresa, and she said, you need to do a podcast.
Well, yeah, because so many great people, man, will do a book and they'll self-publish it, and it won't, like Bill Young from radio, you know, the commercials,
right.
And it'll go nowhere because there's not anything behind it. I think it's great that you're going to do the podcast. If the podcast gets popular, then you roll into to what you're going to do there.
And then you say it gets popular. I'm blown away that we have so many people from England and Paris and Munich and Philippines, and it's like, wow.
Yeah, no,
this thing is spreading like wildfire, and they haven't even heard the podcast yet.
We're going to take it on the road.
Yeah.
We've got our European tour coming up later.
So you've seen those metrics on the clicks on the website.
Yeah. That's why we know where they're coming from.
It's pretty awesome.
Well, guys, thank you very much.
How is your ex-wife?
She's great. Charles is awesome.
Please, I wasn't going to say her
name. I think she still cuts Jody's hair, and she's been cutting the same people's hair forever.
Where is your good friends, though?
Oh, of course. I love her.
She forgave you for
She's a
everything.
Beautiful soul, and I love her, and she gave me beautiful children, and those children gave me beautiful grandchildren.
Do me a favor, could you not mention their ages anymore?
I know, because I used to watch them run around your house in diapers.
I know. So listen to this. These are my grandchildren's names. This cracks me up.
This is
ready?
Awesome.
Crash is going to be 7. Halen is 5. Jagger is 4. Henley is 3. And then I just got Zoe Shea is 2 weeks old.
Wow.
Well, you know, Bob has Ringo. Dylan.
Dylan. I do have a Dylan.
He does have a Dylan.
I do have a Dylan.
Not a joke. My brother named one of his kids Dylan, D-I-L-L-O-N, and I said, is that for Bob Dylan? And he said, no, Matthew Dylan.
Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke. So.
Well, I guess I can throw my notes away. They say, you too, cracker.
There you go.
Yeah, but you got so many more.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember them all, but you always had a great story about that.
We have a lot of David Lee Roth stuff. That's really, you know, because people always are interested in David Lee Roth and how crazy he was. There was one story about this woman, this elderly woman, who kept hanging out at the hotel every city you guys went to.
Yeah, everyone's I kept seeing her. Every hotel, I would see this older lady, and it's like, why is she on the same tour as us? And somebody said to me, she said, oh, she's a choreographer from Hollywood. She's teaching David how to jump, how to come out of spins, how, you know, the whole thing. And this is way before the music have all these dancers and choreographers.
Right.
So
right.
She was ancient, and she was on the road with one of the, and they were just literally brand new, like brand new.
Did you ever get yourself in the drugs and stuff, though?
No.
Okay, that wasn't a real firm, though.
No, I never did.
Tell them a little bit about Van Halen, though, because I was in the arena business, so I worked at the Irwin Center.
You owned the Irwin Center,
as a publicist, right? For 5-6 years or whatever in the 80s when rock was huge, and you were with Warner Brothers.
Right.
And you would, even though I worked in the building, you would get me into the Van Halen after parties.
Right.
In the venue. Now, what a lot of people don't understand is that most artists, 90% of the artists, when they're done with the show, are in a car and on the road before the first person leaves. Before
yes,
the first,
if you have the first, for a lot of shows, if you have a backstage pass for the after party, you are going to be eating a vegetable tray with a bunch of other schmoes.
All right, so I got to tell you this.
But Van Halen threw full on rock and roll parties after the show at the venue where they would roll out a big case. It would open up and there would be a sound system
So I got to tell you the story. I accidentally run into Eddie Van Halen in Park City, Utah. Mm-hmm. And I'm in this art gallery because I'm spending this ridiculous amount of money on a coffee table. And when I come back to see it, because it's a ridiculous amount of money, and I'm asking myself, why am I doing this? I look to my right, and there's Eddie Van Halen. And he goes, shut the...
Yeah.
Because I said, it's Fred Myers. He goes, shut the hell up. And we hug and all that. And I said, hey, I'm looking at this table, and here his woman. No, he introduced me to Valerie and Wolfie because they were there. But his sister-in-law was married to Valerie's brother, was what I was trying to say.
Valerie Bernal.
And so her name was Rachel, and she was British and really a sweet lady, and she was my salesperson. So I said to him, I said, you know, Eddie, I've worked with you for 5 years and you are, you know, multimillionaire. I said, you know, if you want to get this table for me, that'd be pretty sweet. He goes, do you know that the first 2 years of Warner Brothers, I had to live off of Valerie's paycheck?
I was going to ask you that. because they ripped off the band.
No. People love to blame the record company. But here's what happened. Going back to Bob's question. They owed $1 million after the first tour and another million after the second tour because what Bob had said, when we ended a show, they had a crazy setup of amps and speakers. They had midgets.
It was a case that opened up.
It was a circus.
And there was a table of food, like legit food, and then at the end were the M&Ms.
It was a circus.
But then there was KY. I remember there was a gross.
Stop.
There was a gross of condoms.
Stop.
Dozen tubes of KY.
That's not true.
That's
not true.
I've read the writers, dude.
My daughter might be listening.
I was a fan of Van Hagar. I really was.
I was with them too.
And I got laughed at. I heard Hagar on Stern, and I downloaded the audiobook and listened to his book.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear what it was like, and how marriages, you'd have the best intentions when you went on tour, you need to hear his story about what went on.
Right.
And it was still going on with Van Hagar. Wow. They had tents.
I got to be honest with you. It costs money to destroy a hotel room, so that costs money. Costs money to throw these crazy parties with midgets and this whole entourage that David started to have. So no wonder they owed all this money.
Can't use the M word anymore on the air.
What?
Don't use the M word. Little people.
Little people.
Oh, oh, yeah. Little. I'm sorry.
I offended some people.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. I am so sorry for any of you little
no,
people.
No, we had some listeners that, they got me. Sorry, hey, I didn't mean to.
Speaking of that, okay, so I'm 6'4". Why is it okay when I'm in an elevator, people say, wow, you're tall? Because if I, saw a little person, I'd say, wow, you're small.
Right. Hey, guess what?
That's not fair.
I thought I was 6'4 for years, and then I tried to get health insurance, life insurance, and I found out I'm 6'5".
Wow, see, there you go. You
might want to go get checked. All right, listen, we're going to throw you out.
And Thank you very much.
We're not going to a break, so live on mic while they talk. Is it okay if I hug you for the first time in 20 years?
Sure.
All right, cool.